Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, Episode 7 for September 12th, 2009. This Week in Goats. This Week in Google is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Gold account and get your free book at audiblepodcast.com/twig. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twig. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. It's time to talk about all things Google. Joining us right now, as always, the wonderful, the talented Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com. Hi, Jeff.
Howdy.
With a tip of the hat to Jake, who got your sound working.
Without him, I'm nothing.
Is Jake's a junior or a senior?
He's a senior now.
So this is the big, this is the big push right now for college stuff.
We're through the midst of all that. He's about to go out and see more colleges. He spent the summer at Carnegie Mellon.
Wow.
Taking courses. Yeah. And going to look at a few more.
Do you think CMU is in his future?
I think it's a good shot.
It's great computer science.
Thing I'm sure you're going through now, too, of early decision and where do you put all your eggs.
Right. Yeah, I think Abby wants to do early decision at Brown.
That's a great one.
Yeah, if she can get in. GQ just named it the douchiest campus in America. Which, if you ask me, is really a recommendation.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. GQ, if GQ hates you, you're set. Also with us for the first time, and we're really glad to have him. Gina is taking the week off because I think she's got a move. She's involved in moving right now. But she's nominated an excellent replacement. Somebody who's already replaced her once. The editor-in-chief of Lifehacker, Adam Pasch, is with us. Hi, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Great to have you. How long ago did you take over the reins at Lifehacker?
I've been working at Lifehacker since November of 2005, kind of side by side with Gina. Obviously, she was always in the driver's seat. I took over for her in January of this year.
Great. And how's that been?
It's been great.
Lifehacker has maintained its excellent quality. In fact, if anything, you've added more content, and it's really grown nicely. I really love it.
Thank you.
In fact, we find ourselves frequently linking to Lifehacker in all of our shows, but especially in This Week in Google.
Awesome.
So is Google 10 years old or 11 years old or what? That's I guess we should resolve this before we go any further.
It's 11 if you look at their formal business filing, but they don't count that as an anniversary.
They did that on September 7th, 11 years ago.
Right. That's what I understand.
And they're saying that, no, really, it's the 27th when Google went online. That's when. Well, but they were online before their. I don't know. It's all very confusing. Well, anyway.
They're still young.
Happy birthday month to Google. And in honor, they celebrated by doing something very important, very significant. You know what I'm talking about. They increased the size of the search box.
Well, as you get older, your eyesight goes. So, of course, you have to make all the type bigger. But I also saw immediately there was a grease monkey script to make it smaller again.
Inevitably. Yeah. Bigger, wider, bigger, taller, bigger what? It doesn't look different to me, but I'm not that sophisticated.
The text inside, I believe, is larger, and I think the text box itself is a touch larger. But yeah. I actually went to it this morning and tried typing in it, and it didn't look bigger. So I don't know if this is one of those slow Google rollouts, or I'm just crazy, because I'm not seeing any difference on my Google.com search.
It just shows you how psychological it is, because it's looking bigger to me, but now I'm thinking, well, I don't know. Is it really bigger? I don't know. I can't even.
Plus, they also increase the type size when you type in it and when it gives you presumptive links back.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm seeing larger now. I just went, and it's definitely bigger.
It feels bigger. It's bigger than certainly the type in the upper left-hand corner that gives you the other choices.
Yeah, and they've actually, the buttons have changed in look and size a little bit too, the Google search and the I'm Feeling Lucky. This is very exciting stuff.
Marissa Meyer wrote a whole blog post about it. Of course, this is her job.
How excited they are.
We're so excited.
I guess things are getting pretty quiet at Google these days.
We're so excited. Oh, look, everybody. Now, quick, don't look. Everybody look away from the Google site. Don't look at it. Don't look at the search box. And see if you can answer this question from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Did you see this? It was a question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and it was about the colors in the Google logo. And let me see if I can find the exact question so I can see how smart you are. I actually got this right, but I think it was mostly because I guessed. Here's the question. This was on August 17th. Which of the following is a true statement about the letters in the standard Google logo? A, both O's are yellow. Don't look! Both O's are yellow. B, both G's are blue. C, the L is red. Or D, the E is green. Now, since I don't usually visit the Google front page, I think I'm at a disadvantage. Adam, do you know?
I'm going to say C. The L is red.
And C, final answer.
Final answer, C, the L is red.
No, it's not.
I don't think it's not. Now they're looking. No, both G's are blue.
I guess that makes sense with their, yeah.
But that's a tough. I hope the woman won $1 million if she got it right. Isn't that funny how you can stare at something day in, day out for years, 11 years, and not know?
It's Blogoscope also put up a link. I put it up on the friend feed of the changes in the search results page over the last 5 years. And they have images side by side. And you've really got to be anal to figure it out.
So what are the changes? How has it changed?
One of those fine Waldos. The ad box changed its background color from blue to yellow. One assumes that made them about $1 billion.
It probably did, though, right? I mean, it probably did.
That's the only reason they'll do things, right? The logo there got smaller.
Yeah, the logo is smaller. Look at that.
Search button, on the other hand, got bigger. The blue bar changed its color and is brighter now. I remember Marissa has written about that, about how they will look at 40 blues and test every single blue in A-B tests. And so this is the perfect blue. The result width is restricted to a maximum. The phrase similar pages has been shortened to similar. Google does not show the file size anymore for every page. I think that's a tribute to bandwidth in America.
Yeah.
The text sponsored links at the right hand is left aligned, not centered. Another $1 billion. Let's see. The link to the definitions of your search words is pointing to answers.com instead of dictionary.com.
That's probably a business deal.
That is.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting, though? When you're this big and there are this many, I don't know how many billions of searches a day, something so tiny could probably make a huge difference in revenue.
And Google is ruled by metrics.
Right.
And testing. And data wins, and they think data is not political, I've read.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Data has no agenda. Data's data. There's no spin in the data. Wow. I feel manipulated.
Or you should feel served.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Also, another story. Google is going solar. The Google's always been focused on how much energy they use. They're very clear about how much energy they use. They want to do. They want to be green.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Well, Google has converted its Priuses to plug-in hybrids, plugging into their own solar panels on campus. This latest story is that they want to invent mirrors for solar farms that are, I think, 4 times more efficient, because that would reduce the cost to them. Now, I think solar power to them, I think the story said, was like 18 cents a kilowatt hour. And they want to get everything cheaper than coal, which I think was about 8 cents a kilowatt hour.
Huh. We're going to talk go ahead, Dan. Yeah.
Sorry, you guys know, and Google, they've got goats mowing their lawns, right?
Yeah, I had goats mowing my lawn. I actually did this first. I did it before Google did it. We had 2 acres, and I didn't want to mow it. It wasn't a green thing. I just didn't want to have to sit on my riding mower all day, every day. So we got goats. But I'm sure Google has learned this. Because goats, you know, in fact, there are people in my neck of the woods who will rent a herd of goats to eat your poison oak and other weeds that you don't want, you can't get rid of. The goats will eat anything. But I didn't, here's the key, and I hope that this is just a tip for Sergey and the gang. Don't feed the goats. The goats need to be hungry for this to work. My wife would buy bales of alfalfa, and the goats, they said, what do you mean? We're not eating grass. We got alfalfa. They never ate any grass at all.
Did you own them? Were they?
Yeah, we owned goats. And the problem with goats, yeah, we named them. What were they? Was it Daisy? And I can't remember their names.
I was hoping one would be John Deere.
No, I had a John Deere. No. I had a John Deere. So we ended up, because the goats are too smart. Goats get out. They get in problems. They come in the house. They climb on top of your car. they like to be in the highest spot. They're mountain goats, you know, they're mountain dwellers. So we ended up trading them in for sheep. The sheep didn't eat the grass either, by the way. I could see Larry and Sergey going through this exact thing. Yo, goats!
Data test each goat.
Get off building 43! I want to talk about actually something a little more serious, which is the controversy over Google and 911 in just a second. Yes, it's time for a commercial. This show now has commercials.
Yay!
Yay! 2 of them! First of all, we want to welcome Squarespace. We thank them for supporting the show. And Audible.com, they've been on before. They're back on a regular basis. And they said, you'll like this, Jeff. You can recommend any book you want. Just don't recommend Jeff's book.
Hey,
I don't think you should take it personally. I think they just figure everybody knows about what would Google
do. And I've
got
to plug it, darn it.
You can plug it all you want. And we'll mention it. We'll say that it's in there. But it's just, it can't be our book pick of the week, I guess. I don't know. But I do actually want to talk about Squarespace first. Have you, either of you ever used Squarespace or know about Squarespace? Very cool.
I keep hearing about it. I haven't used it yet.
Yeah. They've been a sponsor on a number of our shows for some time. And we actually... We tried them out by moving all of our blogs over to Squarespace. If you want to take a look at insight.twit.tv, that's our in-house blog. What a great move this was. It is not just blogging software, though. It's hosting and it's software that makes it possible to do a variety of really remarkable things. You can host a blog, of course, but you can also... photo galleries, forums, amazing stat pages. The templates are gorgeous. Anytime you're thinking about setting up a page, and I think this is kind of the trend these days, you might want to, I host my own stuff and I'm starting to think what a mistake this has been. You let the pros do the hosting. Squarespace.com, very affordable, but you can try it absolutely free if you go to squarespace.com/twig. Squarespace.com/TWIG. You can give it a try and take a look at all they have to offer. Very easy to try it too, because they have seamless blog importing from movable type WordPress, TypePad, and Blogger. Incredible templates that'll get you up and running very quickly, but then customization couldn't be simpler. In fact, it's using Ajax, so it's drag and drop, so you can very quickly change how you do it. Squarespace is just really a remarkable solution. They've always been able to import WordPress, Blogger, TypePad, and movable type, but they've even improved their blogging tool. They just announced, I just saw this on TechCrunch, a new blog importing tool that will get almost, you know, just everybody, you just enter the credentials and it all gets sucked in. They have submitted an iPhone application, which will make it very easy to post. That should be up there very soon. This is just an incredible solution for you. If you're looking to set up your first website, or if you've got a website and you want to move it somewhere where it will always be up, always be running, this is the way to do it. Squarespace.com/twig. Try it absolutely free. The trial version will win you over, though. I got to warn you. Squarespace.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. So 9/11 was yesterday. And, you know, Google with these doodles has been pretty clear that they're going to say things about kind of lightweight things, not necessarily about national holidays, religious holidays. And in this case, they didn't do anything about 9/11. But a lot of people were offended by that. Adam, do you think that's
Fox
something?
Fox News was.
Yeah, Fox News. Maybe not a lot of people. But I've seen some blog stuff in the blogosphere. Do you think Google should be doing some sort of commemoration of 9/11? Or is that just too narrow?
You know, I guess I personally don't feel... Google has set up this expectation that for everything that comes around, there's going to be some sort of a custom Google homepage image. But Google's also become such a giant corporation that they're so careful, I think, or a lot more careful now than they used to be. I feel like, have they done it? They've done it.
That's a good question.
Right?
Have they done it in the past? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't
never
I don't
have.
Have they not?
They never have.
I don't think they have. And I think when they use that space for serendipitous things like Halloween and aliens abducting right. O's, then to me, to have thrown in 9/11 would have been, I think, even in poor taste.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of reverse political correctness test that anybody can be offended by anything in this country anymore. And so they just yell that Google should be doing what I think they should do. When most days of the year, they don't do crap with that. At the same time, however, they bragged on their official blog that they were the heart of, I'm trying to look it up here right now, a 9/11 history feature put out by, I think, the official library of the 9/11 library memorial.
See,
that allows people to put up their stories against Google Maps, and it's really quite good.
That's more serious, and certainly that's a more valuable application.
And far more value than what are they going to do? You know, change the L into one of two towers?
Right.
You know,
the doodle is so lightweight. And yet I look what Microsoft did with Bing, and I think it's actually quite beautiful and appropriate.
It's a different thing.
But they have that whole picture on Bing. They showed the memorial, which is the lights where the tower was shining up into the sky, and it's just gorgeous. And then they have, well, it's now maybe this does trivialize it, because then below they have some New York related searches, but it's check the weather in New York and find events in New York. So it does in some way trivialize
it. Algorithms will get you every time.
Yeah, they will.
I just found the references to something called Make History at the National September 11th Memorial and Museum. And it uses the Google Maps API, and you just wander around there. And I was there that day at the World Trade Center and was a block away from the South Tower when it came down. So I have visions seared in my brain, and I found a whole new video there I'd never seen before that just brought back the real feeling of being there that day after the towers came down. And so that's a far more powerful statement. I think that Microsoft was in a more difficult position because they couldn't put a cute cat picture on that day.
Right.
Google is just Google every day.
Well, and also both these companies are international companies. And so I see that they might not want to do something that's so specifically American. And yet 9/11, I think everybody worldwide is very aware of it.
Well, Adam, Leo, do you know when they change the American logo, does that change internationally? Do they do specific things for Germany or France? You know, do they do cheese logos on French Cheese Day or whatever?
I don't know. I would imagine they do have localization, don't you?
Bing or Google?
Well, both, actually.
Either, but I'm Google.
I think Google's doodles are worldwide.
Well, but we have they have a Thanksgiving. They always do a Thanksgiving logo, and is that worldwide?
That's very U.S. In fact,
well, no, I mean, do they do it? Does it show worldwide?
That's a good question.
Chat, we have Web131 saying no, it's international, and then we have Dom R saying no, Google doesn't do that. Google's different in each country, says another one. So we have no agreement in chat. That's new.
Dom R, who lives in the U.K., says we see the U.S. logos in the U.K. On the other hand. Steve H., who lives in Canada, says, you know, Canada has Thanksgiving Day, but it's a month earlier. And he says, we see the Thanksgiving logo in October in Canada. And, of course, we see it in November in the U.S. So, I don't know. That's very, you know, that's kind of interesting. But it's something new that nobody ever had to think about before. It's true for us, too, shows on the internet. We're global. And we, you know, for a long time, I was doing Audible recommendations that were U.S. only and stuff. And don't worry, your audience will make you aware of that.
Yeah, we always get all kinds of complaints when we post about something on Lifehacker, and it turns out to be U.S. only.
Yeah.
But it's always tough to know you have to like to make that check, I don't know, like proxying from another country to test everything, because a lot of things just don't tell you.
I think that's a lesson that we're learning. That I'm glad to learn. I mean, I think that's a great lesson, and I love it that we're international. And I know that Google's very aware of this. And come to think of it, if you saw it, maybe these people are looking at Google.com, and if they go to Google.ca or Google.co.il, as one of our Israeli listeners says, they're going to see localized stuff at that site, I'm sure, because they certainly get localized languages. So I'm sure they would get localized stuff. So a tempest in a teapot, the 911. I agree. A doodle isn't really the right way to do it.
I'm not necessarily a religious Fox News basher, but it was a fairly obvious stand.
Oh yeah, they're gonna say something about it. Yeah.
Yeah, to say this is a patriotic test and you failed.
Yeah.
You know, what can you do?
It's the state.
Everybody wants to shoot at Google these days. they're the biggest target around.
It's the state of journalism in the U.S. right now. Let's see. I'm seeing these articles. Bring back the small Google search box. Just cracks me up.
Not just bring it back, but create a script for it. That's kind of thing that Adam can do. I couldn't do it.
I just love it. Article in the Washington Post. Google economist sees good signs in searches. I didn't even know Google had a chief economist, but it does. Hal Varian.
He's brilliant.
You know him?
No, I haven't met him, but he's pretty amazing and really is, I think, critical to Google's strategic success because he does see these big trends. And he said in this article that he sees financial recovery because they already know that Google is a good predictor of the job numbers. By people looking for jobs, they're seeing an uptick in housing. So I went into Google Trends myself and I started looking up words like unemployment and housing. A little bit off, but what interested me was the bottom half of Google Trends is news media references. And every single one I looked at was coming up. And it looks like they haven't, I guess it looks like down there, but they haven't, I wonder whether they've added more sources and they haven't regularized that or something. But anyway, if you look at things like jobs in Google and stock in trends, it's quite amazing to see. But if you look at the long-term trends since 2004, you really get a different picture.
This is the amazing thing about search. And it's one of the things that people talk a lot about with Twitter, FriendFeed and others, is the metadata or the additional data that you can extrapolate by collecting a lot of content and looking at it. Is Twitter better situated to do that than Google? It seems like Google's got everything, including all the Twitter data.
Well, I mean, I think the thing about Twitter that always, I guess, makes it pits them against Google and makes Google probably a little nervous is how, whatever, it's what everyone always talks about, the real-time search. But, you know, yesterday afternoon, I don't know if you guys read about it, but there was the space shuttle was going to land in Florida and there was weather or something. And they ended up landing at Edwards Air Force Base in California. And the space shuttle, I think, re-entered the atmosphere above Los Angeles somewhere. And two, like, loud sonic booms that scared the crap out of everyone.
Because it was unexpected.
Yeah, no one knew it was happening. And the first place that I looked to see what was going on is Twitter, because I know it's going to be the first place that, like, it's going to be, I can search that and it'll be published and it'll be indexed and I can find it.
Yeah.
I think Google's certainly aware of that need. I mean, you know, adding Google News into the universal search was the first attempt to do that, but yeah. They're not good at live. They're just simply not. And you're right, Adam. It's about, Twitter has what's happening from the witnesses. This morning I saw that a whole bunch of San Franciscans were cowering under their beds saying that they were hearing lightning and thunder. They're hearing thunder.
We're not used to it. Year. We're not used to it in Northern
exactly.
California.
So I accuse them of having sissy weather there. sun and fog.
It was really funny to see that because we had it up here in Northern. But I grew up in back east, so lightning, big deal. But these guys, they don't know. My kids heard the booming. They had no idea what was going on.
They thought it was bombs and all kinds of
stuff. It was really loud, I have to say. It usually
is.
Maybe I'm getting to be a wussy Northern California. So, but that's two different kinds of search. There's real-time search, which is searching on stuff that happened right now. You wouldn't use Twitter to judge the economic vitality of the U.S.
Ah, Well, I don't know. That's interesting. That's a really interesting thing, Leo. Jonathan Harris, who's a really brilliant artist, is looking at mood things on Twitter. And he has various – he was the original designer for Daylife, former partner. And I'm forgetting the name of his service, unfortunately. But if, I wonder if you tracked mood words on Twitter over a longer period of time, if you could put that against, you know, stock prices and joblessness.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and actually, I think there's already some Twitter applications that are tracking things in that direction. There's one that I looked at once where you can, you give them your username and it analyzes your tweets and says, like, what kind of, like, how many percent of them are, like, negative tweets or, like, positive, or what's, like, your tweeting attitude?
I don't want to know either. My attitude sucks. But that's an. But I think
Leo, you're the nicest guy on the internet.
Oh, you haven't seen my new stickers. We just ordered these. Leo Laporte. Remember, kids, Uncle Leo. It's got a picture of me. Remember, kids, Uncle Leo says, "Screw you." This is we're gonna make $1 million on these. They're gonna sell like
I'll
crazy.
Buy 10.
So, can Google do real time? Is it impossible?
Well, as they're presently constructed, yeah. But I think that, as I mentioned last week, I heard Marissa Meyer talk about hyper-personal news streams. And if she's talking about it, they're thinking about it.
Of course, they have to look and say, look at all this value that's being created by real-time search. The question is, do they have the data?
And
Adam,
Google,
what do you think?
Well, Google has... I mean, I feel like I've heard, at least maybe it's just speculation, that Google has talked to Twitter and trying to get like their real-time feed, basically, that so they can index it like instantly.
The fire hose, we call it.
Right, but at the same time, you know, obviously they have the potential for that. Maybe even in something like Google Wave at some point, because there can be waves that are public, and if people were to start using Wave en masse and it was a popular thing, and you could have the option to make like certain types of discussions like public part of the searchable Google Bit database. I mean, it could be another source of that sort of information.
That's very intriguing. Is real time search a fad or a long term viable solution? And is it just something that goes in parallel with a traditional Google style search, or does it replace Google style search? Adam,
I don't think it replaces Google style search. I think it's a specific sort of need for specific types of searches. But at the same time, if when I search Twitter I search Los Angeles boom or something because I want to know what happened that felt like something hit my house, but weirdly in a not normal way. I have to weed through a lot of Twitter that doesn't give me the story. And I have to I have to use some discrimination about what is real and what's not, because some people were saying Los Angeles, oh my God, there was an earthquake.
Right.
And if Google, I mean, ideally with real time search, the engine would be making those decisions for me and sort of aggregating the results and creating like the most likely answer or things like that that are actually useful to me, because as is, it's great that you can do that with Twitter, but it's not perfect.
I think you're right. We've got to find ways to add value on top of Twitter, and that's where there's going to be a lot of success. There's Tinker.com, which comes from Glam.com, the largest women's network online, and it's really pretty impressive about how they're trying to find curated streams from Twitter. I did an experiment last week. I went to Twitter and I searched, because I'm having to have surgery on Monday. I searched the word prostate and I got nothing but spam.
Oh, interesting.
By the way, one of which, just for a little aside here, wanted alternative therapies, like, you know, take my vitamin therapy, don't have your surgery. One of them was, for men who of a certain age will understand why this is weird, suggested massage therapy. Now, if you know how you get to the prostate, that's rather...
What part are they going to massage?
No, you don't want to know, Leo. You don't want to know. Anyway, but that's... Adam's right. I got that junk by pure Twitter search. You have to... It's a Clay Shirky rule. Too much stuff is not too much stuff. It's a case of filter failure.
Yeah.
And there, you need to add value. But the other way I look at it these days when I talk to media folks is that they're getting their audience... some of their audience, probably the smallest bit, from people who are loyal to them and go to them directly. They're getting a hell of a lot from search. They're getting a lot now from aggregation, and they're also getting a lot from human links. We talked, I think, in the first show about Bitly causing as many links a month, clicks a month, as Google News, a billion a month.
Right.
And so you have to all add all that up together, I think, to a new ecosystem. And when you add in things like insinuating yourself in streams with RSS and other means and widgets and APIs, I think the API, Upender Chardonnay, my partner at Daylife, has said that that's really the next frontier of distribution. And so you add it all in together, and it becomes a new whole.
So it's a, it's a synergized all of the above. With some some judgment involved, because you're right, I'm just searching Twitter for prostate, and it's universally worthless. There's nothing good in here.
Exactly. So, but where you see a problem, there's always an opportunity. So Adam's right. I mean, he's thinking like the developer that he is in terms of saying, well, how do I fix it? I see the problem. How do we fix it?
Right.
And those who fix it will have businesses, I think.
Yeah. Did you see what Facebook did with Facebook Lite? Talk about going after Twitter. And now they've added at sign stuff. I mean, they're looking, they look almost like Twitter. And I have to say, with the failures that Twitter's had, the inability it has had to keep up with the volume, the spamming, it really seems like their platform is unable to handle a lot of the problems that they're facing. It seems like there's an opening for somebody like Facebook, if they can execute, to come along and steal that. Now, Facebook has a lot more metadata than Twitter does that can and doesn't have the spam issue, right? Because it's hard to spam Facebook, I think.
I think it's easier now than it once was.
Never say never.
It used to be difficult to get a Facebook account if you weren't a student, you know?
Right.
But and then I think it went to corporations or something, and then it opened up much more wide. My problem with Twitter, and I've had this conversation with Gina a lot of times, and Facebook both, is that when you've got... They become these platforms in themselves, but they're not a platform. You know, it's a company who owns all this data. It's not
right.
And so Twitter, you know, people always talk about Twitter. RSS is dead. Email is dead. Twitter is everything. But it's always so disheartening when you think about it in the terms where it's like,
well, because it's dysfunctional. It's not merely. It's,
well, and it's and it, it, it someone owns it. Like no one owns.
It's a closed platform.
SMTP or RSS, their protocols. And anyone can implement them, and anyone can use them.
And if Ev says Google, you can't have the fire hose.
Yeah.
Google's out of luck.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the cool things again, given the Google way to do. Because it's installable anywhere, presumably with enough time and enough people being able to learn the technology and everything. It's open source, and it can be installed on anyone's server. So potentially it could do the same sorts of real-time stuff that Twitter does, but it wouldn't belong necessarily to Google.
That's really interesting. And as Gina will tell you, we talk about Google Wave. I think every show we should have called it the Google Wave Show.
Yeah. Well, until Wave comes out, and then we find out.
Then we find out nothing. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think you're right there. And you add in these various elements that make up a more rich whole, a more valuable whole. You have the identity that Facebook has, which I think is incredibly valuable to this.
Forget that. I'm sorry that happened. Continue on.
It really scares me to hear me.
I clicked a link, and all of a sudden I'm hearing you twice.
it frightens even me, Leo.
Yeah.
But you have a greater whole. So the identity of Facebook matters, and the functionality of Wave enabling you to add in new relationships of people and the content and publishing in new ways. I think you're right. It becomes something bigger than what we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not like, I'm not a total Wave. I'm not won over by Wave at this point. I think last week you guys were talking about it. You and Leo haven't tried it. Neither of you have tried it, right?
No.
At this point?
No, I'm still hurt that I haven't gotten an invite.
Somebody at Google sent me an email saying you're on the media list, but you'll get it at the end of this month. So, and I think I think you're on the media list too. I would be willing to guess as the author of a fine book called What Would Google Do?
But I think that at this point, what you guys talked about last week was right, where it's like, as long as Wave is still limited to a small group of people, it's actually just like
It's meaningless.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
And you don't know what the point would be. I'm hoping, honestly, like, it's not, no one who I know has tried it as a user, like, from that perspective, a developer perspective is maybe something entirely different, but from a user perspective, anyone I know who's tried it has been a little bit confused or disappointed with what they've seen. But I don't think that's like Google Wave will never work. I just think at this point, it's not really a user platform.
Right. Well, and I've said this before too, as soon as we can run a Wave server, I plan to. And I can imagine us using Wave for this show, for instance, to incorporate listeners' comments in and one hopes more. So maybe that'll happen as soon as September. They're going to add 100,000 users in September. That might be when it really, well, we can all see what Wave will do. You know, I remain excited, but hesitant. Hey, I do want to mention somebody from I think it was from Google sent me an email saying, you really ought to take calls and comments and suggestions on the show. And I'd like to say that we're going to start doing this. I was able to get a Google Voice invite from, I said, yeah, I'd be glad to do it if I could only get another Google Voice account. So he sent me an invite. So we now have a call Twig number. It's 9795 Twig VM. 9790. It's a Google Voice mail box. So call, leave a message if you have a comment or a suggestion. If you'd like to, you know, say, Leo, you're crazy, or Jeff really understands what he's talking about. Or perhaps make a recommendation for a prostate massage. 9795 Twig VM, TWIGVM. That's 979-589-4486. Toll charges will apply. None of the Google Voice numbers are toll free. I don't even know where 979 is. I think it's North Carolina. 979-589-4486. If you can keep it to under a minute, remember that when you leave a message, you're giving us permission to use it on the show. And I hope starting next week, we'll be getting some callers' voicemail messages on the show through Google, or text. If you text, it'll also come in through Google Voice. So that is a way to respond back. Not exactly real time as Google Wave will be. So do you think that given what you just said, Adam, about Twitter being proprietary, it's really hopeless or futile or stupid to say, well, Facebook might be doing it first? I mean, that's just another proprietary platform, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is my opinion as someone who doesn't like the idea of having all of his information locked in to someone who can change their terms of service at any time and leave you kind of stuck. But I'm just not like, I'm not big on the idea of either of the, I think they're both great services. Don't get me wrong. I like Twitter, and I have grown to like Facebook and over time, but I get uncomfortable about the idea that everything belongs to them and everyone's supporting. There's Twitter links and Twitter movie trailers have Twitter handles on them. Like everyone is moving. It's the new, like, you know, it used to be at the end of the trailer, it was novel when they started adding websites that would be like,
right,
you know,
right,
what is thematrix.com or whatever. Right. And it was like, whoa, right, look, whoa, at these guys.
Yeah.
The future, movies and the internet, and now it's all at what is the Matrix.
It is amazing, isn't it? But that's trendy, and you know, maybe that'll catch on.
Yeah.
Or maybe,
yeah,
it's just this week's flavor of the month, you know. So I like Facebook Lite only because it's lighter. But I am with you 100%, Adam, that I feel like I think this became real to me when FriendFeed was sold to Facebook. But I've always worried a little bit about how much value that we're pouring into companies like Twitter, and why should we be? There hasn't been an open choice.
And I think that they're all aware of this, and I think that's why they struggle so, or they work so hard to try and appear open. You know, Twitter has a great API, and that's great, and everyone uses it. And in our links this week, FriendFeed/Facebook now open sourced the
Tornado.
Yeah, Tornado, the real-time messaging and whatnot that FriendFeed, the technology of FriendFeed's built on. So I think they're all aware of it and trying their best to appear as open as possible, but ultimately, you know, they're never going to be totally open.
Well, it's an interesting question whether FriendFeed did that or Facebook did that, you know?
Right.
But Adam, I think you're right that if we need to compare back to earlier players, Twitter is one hell of a lot more open than Facebook ever was or still is. And, you know, we complain about that too, but I think that's quite important. Or, you know, as I remember back to the various earliest days of Blogger, if I'm right, it took a while before you had a means to export your stuff to other platforms. You know, Google,
yeah,
it's absolutely right. It's an important issue. Google now has its, I forget what they call it. You know, their initiative to make sure that they just did some more things this week to make sure that your stuff is portable. And that's an important philosophical piece there. So, you know, I tend to want to give Twitter some time, and they're developing something that's wholly new to us, and people just beat them up when they're down. It's free, and they do keep adding things. So I want to be a little forgiving.
I agree.
They did the right thing this week by putting out a new terms of service that opened it up, said that you own your own tweets, but also said, and we might be adding advertising. But I thought it was actually in stark contrast to Facebook's stumble on their terms of service. Twitter was very clear. You own your own tweets. We don't own them. So you're right, Adam.
Well, I was thinking about that, though. If they had learned from Facebook, they would have put out a beta version of the TOS to enable us to have some comment first.
Right. And had people be upset. And then they could fix it.
Disaster. Yeah.
No, actually,
perhaps that's what Google would do.
No, in fact, you're exactly right. And if they had put out what they put out and asked people for comment, even that would have been fine. Right. They don't have to play around with a draconian choice that we then get them to back off on. No, I think you're right. I think that this lesson's still not quite learned. Not quite learned. Hey, again, a reminder, our listener feedback line is now online. Listener feedback via Google Voice at 9795 Twig VM. You know, I love it that Google Voice lets you spell out stuff, but you can never really spell out anything you want. So that's the closest I could get. 97.
I love Leo or something like that.
I tried everything. I actually have 2525 Hey Leo, but... But I'm going to keep that for myself. 9795 Twig VM. That's outside the U.S. +1 979 589 4486, which is not a bad number. But you can call and leave a message there, and we will use your messages on the show next week if we get any. Meanwhile, I want to talk to you about audible.com. We're going to take a little break. Adam, if you want to run out and go to the bathroom or anything, this is the time when the rest of the hosts just start to ignore me. And
great.
You can do so as well. We'll be back in a minute. You can get your free book right now by joining audible.com, joining them and getting that great gold account. That's one book a month, and your first book is absolutely free. So we've got a URL just for the show, brand new one, audiblepodcast.com. I'm typing it in just to make sure it works, /twig, audiblepodcast.com/twig. And Audible is a wonderful resource for those of you who aren't familiar with it for audio entertainment. I know if you're listening to podcasts, you probably already know a little bit about listening to spoken word stuff. Audible just is going to expand your repertoire considerably. Whether it's serious books like Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique, out for the first time in audio, thanks to Audible for recording that, to the latest Potboiler from Dan Brown, The Lost Symbol. Yes, they've got that. Audible has 60,000 titles on all sorts of topics, including business, including Jeff's book, What Would Google Do?, which I'm not supposed to plug, but I'm going to anyway. No, they didn't say don't plug it. They just say have another pick in addition to What Would Google Do? Audible?
Leo, I'm listening to Chris Anderson's Free right now on Audible.
Is it on Audible?
I think so.
Awesome. I'm going to order it right now. Yeah. The Future of a Radical Price. This is a.
He also put it out for free, but I paid for it.
Worth paying for. Hey, look at this. It looks like Audible's selling it for free. The price on free is $0 on audible.com. So run on over there. That's really cool. Good for you, Audible. They have an abridged version. I wonder if the abridged version costs more. Fewer words. Yeah, $18.89. So get the unabridged. You pay for the fewer words. Get the unabridged version. That can't be right. Let me add that to my cart and see. Is that an error?
Yeah, no, I think that Chris Anderson did that with them.
Isn't that wonderful?
And they put it up free on Kindle too, I think, but then he still went out in the bestseller list. Damn him.
Well, that proves his point. You can give stuff away and still make a good living. There's a good one. Get that one for free. The future of a radical price. Tell me, do you like it? Is it? Do you agree with him or do you disagree? You think it's...
Yeah, no, I do agree with him and kind of preemptively quoted him in my book. Not that I want to plug that again. No, I think that he's... The problem in this new world is that people just think that we're slightly adapting the old models and old structures, and we're not. And what Chris sees in both his books, and I tried to, and Clay Shirky does, is try to explain that, no, folks, it's bigger than you think.
Yeah.
And Chris is very good at doing that.
Yeah, he really is. The author of The Long Tail, of course. This is his latest and much recommended free The Future of a Radical Price at an amazing price, thanks to Audible and Chris. Free. So I don't know if I should even get that and get another book free. Get that and what would Google do? Now
you're doing wonders for Audible's bottom line.
Now you're doing good. AudiblePodcast.com/twig. Thank them so much for their support. If you like the shows that we do on This Week in Tech, you can thank Audible for making them possible. When he talks about free, is a podcast an example of free? I mean, is advertising supported media an example of free?
Sure. That's really where the model and media was invented, was TV and radio.
Right. So that's
those who scream today about that people should pay. Well, no, there's an economy out here that just doesn't have that.
Well, and I think it's part of the problem for the record companies and others is that if people are used to getting stuff for free music on the radio, they're already preconditioned to free content. So it's going to get very hard to make them pay for content if they haven't paid for it in the past.
Or Chris's point, or the economics change. They pay a lot more now for concert tickets than they used to.
Very good point.
It's Fred Wilson's line about freemium. Music becomes almost a freemium model. Some number are getting the music for free. Not all, but some. But it pumps the record. This is the record sales. The record sales pump the concerts now.
Yeah, that's
part of the news we have this week is that Google added into the Newspaper Association of America taking Google Checkout and offering it up to those who want paywalls as a means to bring micropayments to newspapers, which I don't like because I don't think it's going to work. And I think it's actually going to kill papers faster. But I tweeted that I thought it was a cynical act that Google was using its unused checkout to try to curry favor with newspapers in their useless quest for a new revenue stream. And then somebody else said on Twitter that, it was a masterful stroke. And I said, cynicism and masterful strokes are not at all mutually exclusive.
So I think Google Payment is a great system, by the way. I use it whenever I can. The problem is I can rarely use it because most vendors.
I've never used it. Adam, have you ever used it?
Never.
Adam?
Oh.
Adam?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, wait a minute. I potted him down. There you go. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Adam.
Okay. No, I have not.
I'm the only one who here has used it. I can't remember where I've used it, but I've used it a number of times. And I would love to use it instead of PayPal. I wish more people would take it.
I have used it one time, I guess, a charity donation site.
Twestival or something. Yeah.
Is Microsoft's, payment structure still out there?
I didn't know they had one.
Oh yeah. When they bought, Upender Chardonnay's prior company, this is horrible of me. I should know this.
Huh.
It was the only one for so long, but I always argued that the reason it didn't work is because no one's going to trust Microsoft for their money.
We trust PayPal. I don't know about that. I'm looking for Microsoft micropayment. Live Points, is that it? No, that's Windows Live.
No.
Then by the way, that's a terrible system. I do use that. Let me see here. Microsoft is working on a micropayment system for the web. This was something Bill Gates was always pushing. I remember in his Comdex speeches where you'd wave a wallet at the Starbucks cart and you'd get paid. What is Google proposing with the online news payment system? How would that work?
They're proposing micropayments. which Clay Shirky is who will get on this podcast one day or another, is eloquent about, that that's nickel and diming people. Nobody wants to be nickel and diming. It's not going to work. It's just simply not going to work. The cost of doing it is very high. And that's why I think it's a cynical act. I think Google knows that, even though Sergey has talked about, maybe we should help do this for newspapers. The economics just don't make sense, I don't think.
I'm not convinced, and I'll wait till Clay's on before we really debate this. But boy, if I could charge a buck every time you downloaded a show, what would be wrong with that?
What would Audible say about that? I mean, where are you going to make more money in the long run? I think is really the question.
It is a question, and it's an unanswered question. You know, if I could get the same number of people paying a buck a show, I'd make a lot more money.
I think you might make more money by just getting donations.
Well, we've done that. No, isn't that interesting? Because the first thing, my first goal 5 years ago when I started doing all of this, I said, I will never take ads. Never say never. Learn my lesson. I said, I will never take ads. I really love the idea of the direct drive between your listeners and the content. Listeners pay for the content. If they like it, they pay for it. If they don't, they don't. But the problem was only about 1% of everybody who listened, maybe even less, paid. So
which
it wasn't
is,
enough to do
common
it.
Common for NPR and other places like that.
I think NPR gets to 4%, but they do it by needling you every 5 minutes. I wasn't willing to do that. So if
Adam, do you pay for content anywhere?
I would say
if
virtually no, not at all.
You know what I just did, and I did it more out of altruism than anything else. Ars Technica has decided to do a premium version for $50 a year, which it's Condé Nast. Guaranteed flop. I mean, it's guaranteed. And they have some stuff. You get chats with the editors. You get a special forum. The only thing that I thought was in the least bit of value to me was you get the full RSS feeds and you don't get ads on the site. And I thought, well, getting the full RSS feeds in my Google Reader, now that would be nice. Really the truth is it was an act of charity to send him $50.
And how many people are going to pay for
Nobody's going to do it. Nobody's going to do it.
The effort is just not worth it, it seems to me.
I think that we quickly learned that people considered the shows of great value. They love the show. We have huge audience numbers, but nobody's going to send me, I asked $2 a month. Nobody's going to send, very, very few people will do that. 1 in 100 will do it. And I thank those 1 in 100, but we had to take advertising or we couldn't grow.
I got it. Microsoft Passport.
Oh, Passport. Oh, I knew about Passport. Did that happen? Yeah, I didn't know that had a micropayment associated. I thought it was a single sign-on.
Right. But I think it was a structure that was there. And it was actually, Microsoft bought Firefly, the original collaborative filtering company, which Upender Chardonnay started at MIT Media Lab with others. But they really, all they wanted out of it was this payment structure.
I should have known the answer because I am one of the last Passport users in the world. I still log on to Windows Live with my Passport account and Expedia.
Wow.
I know. I hold on. So, you think it's cynical of Google. I'm not sure I would jump on that. I think it might be that Google really wants to give micropayments a chance. We've never really given that a chance. We don't know it would fail. If I could set up a system to charge a buck just to see what would happen.
I would use it to make a buck bet with you right now that it won't work.
You're with Chris Anderson on the free side, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm against charging. I just don't think it's where the economics are. And I think it's too soon to shut media down behind paywalls.
There are, I mean, obviously, as Rupert Murdoch has pointed out, their Wall Street Journal makes money behind a paywall, but it's one of very few things that make money behind a paywall.
Well, this weekend, the Times of London is going behind the wall.
Right.
So we'll see how that works.
This will be the test, maybe. This is the test we've waited for. And you'll have to buy a year subscription. What if, I would love to see somebody do that and say, pay 25 cents an article.
I think there'll be that, too. And the rumors are the New York Times is looking at membership or at metering. You've read too much. Got to pay now. which seems silly to me because you're punishing your most loyal readers.
Right. I love you. Oh, well, you better pay us then. If you love us that much, we want some money out of you. Would Lifehacker ever consider such a thing, Adam?
No, I don't think so. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
You're making too much money without it, huh?
Well, you'll have to ask Nick Denton.
It's a Gawker
Nick
property.
Is making a lot of money.
I think Nick's doing all right. I think we
can assume that
Nick's doing all right with display ads, essentially.
Yeah,
the old newspaper model.
Highly targeted, good audiences, well sold, well positioned. Yeah, Nick's brilliant at that.
Yeah.
The only reason I would love to go, it's purely political. I'd love to go micropayments is because then it disintermediates me. Right now it's I have two audiences. I have a bifurcated audience. I have the advertisers and I have my audience. And it feels a little bit like I'm selling my audience to the advertisers. And what I'd love to do is, as much as we love our advertising, we're very, we try to handle that by picking advertisers I use and, being very limited in the number of ads and the quality of ads we do. But wouldn't it be nice to just say, hey, if you like the show, give me a buck, like a street busker. And we'll have a direct conversation. If you like what you hear, pay for it. Isn't that seem like a cleaner transaction?
I mean, it's definitely a cleaner transaction, but I just don't see the consumer willingness to jump on something like that. It's really limited to whether or not anyone will do it, as you obviously know. And I don't see it happening, at least not the way things are now.
Yeah. And a good micropayment system, which has been lacking all along, wouldn't fix that problem.
No, we've got to look at the bottom line of a total P&L. And I think what's happening in the industry right now, because they're in such a panic, is they're trying to preserve one old revenue line because we used to have it.
No, I'm with you on that's the wrong reason to do it.
Right. I mean, if you could, the other way people look at it is there a premium version of Twit? What does premium really mean?
I don't do that? Because then you get in the police business. And I have a very clear example of this. My syndicator for the radio show, Premier Radio Networks, does sell streams of Rush Limbaugh. You can't listen to Rush Limbaugh on the internet unless you pay for it. You can't listen to Coast unless you pay for it. And I've talked to the guy who manages this, and he says, I spend most of my day finding pirate streams and squishing them.
Yeah.
Because you're exactly right. The people who love Rush the most are the most incented to steal it.
Mm-hmm. And in their view, distribute it.
Right.
And market it and promote it.
Right. And so why are you stopping them? Why not let them do that?
And then find a way to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Adam.
At the same time, once you're getting pirated, you probably do have a large audience still that's not going there. Because a lot of times... to me, the reason why something like Hulu is such a success is that it's easier than finding it and downloading it on BitTorrent.
Point of access.
Yeah, and people are completely willing to watch an ad if they don't have to hunt it down somewhere else. Like, if you have a single point of access that's the easiest, and sometimes I feel like that is the only way where you could pay a little bit. I think, pricing schemes or pricing is a lot of the problem. I think, in the software world for so long, applications would cost like 10 to 20 to like several hundred dollars, depending on it. And now the iPhone App Store has come out and applications are $1 or $2 and people like will pay for them like crazy, even though no one wants to pay like $10 or $20 for an application. And I think those sorts of like changes, I guess, those shifts, if they could happen in some way in the publishing world, I guess there's potential. I mean, I don't see the straight road from one point to another, but it happens in other things, I guess.
Well, that software is the exact opposite model, where there are some software guys trying to make money in advertising, but for the most part, I don't know how well that works. I suspect it doesn't work well because you don't see it kind of ubiquitous.
No.
Although it may be on the iPhone. I just saw an article by somebody who said if you're charging for your iPhone app and not putting ads, why aren't you putting ads in it? If you make much more money if you get that many more impressions than you would for $1.99 on an app.
Yeah, I did read something. I think it was probably published by one of the iPhone ad provider people.
Probably.
That you plug into your app.
Right.
And it was something, and claiming that people were making a lot of money that way.
Right. I don't know. Red Troll in the chat room suggests the premium edition, I would wear a tie, a necktie. You know, we give you the premium edition of this show for free.
That's true.
And I don't want to police it. I don't want to be playing whack-a-mole with people who are... Dig tried to do that. Remember Dig Nation? They said, if you pay us a little money, you get it a little sooner. And they stopped doing it because so many people would just... Our audience is technologically sophisticated enough that they just get around it. You know, maybe Rush's audience isn't, but our audience is. Dig's audience, Dig Nation's audience just took it and put it out. And they finally gave up and said, oh, I guess this isn't going to work. All right, we'll keep running ads. Just a few. Not a lot.
I also see here in the chat that they're clamoring for TWiT on Hulu or Play On or places like that.
Working on it. That's just a matter of time. Working on it. Very close to something that's going to make that possible. Let's wrap her up because I know it's pizza night in the Jarvis household.
And it is.
We usually end up the show with Gina's tip of the week, Jeff's stat of the week, and my tool of the week. But since Gina's not here, Adam Pasch from Lifehacker with his tip of the week, Adam.
All right. Well, I'm actually going to give you, because we didn't talk about a couple of the things that happened in Google Voice this week. So I'm going to give you sort of a three-pronged Twig tip.
Great.
The first two are related. They're Google Voice ones. But since a lot of people don't have Google Voice, I'll throw in a third for Gmail that everyone has. So earlier this week, Google Voice enabled SMS forwarding to your email. And then you can now reply to SMSs that you get through Google Voice and from your email. So you never have to open your phone if you don't want to. Very handy if you're just sitting at your desk. They also, Gmail Labs added a new feature called, I'm not sure, but basically what it does is embeds a little flash player that you can, when you get a voicemail from Google Voice sent to your Gmail inbox, it'll have the transcription, and below that you get a little flash player that you can play back the voicemail inside Gmail.
Cool. Look at that. And right, so it's highlighting as I'm playing it.
So, and that will be inside Gmail if you go into Gmail Labs and turn on the feature, which is called...
It does it in Google Voice right now.
Right. You can already do it in Google Voice, but now it'll happen in your Gmail account as well. Yeah, and actually when you listen to the message in your Gmail account in that same little inline playback, it will mark it as read in Google Voice, so you don't have to go to Google Voice.
So they're all tied together.
Yeah, it's all tied together.
That's fine.
So those are the two Google Voice tips, both things that happened this week. So my Gmail tip is for anyone who doesn't like the ads in the sidebar of Gmail.
Yes.
So this was in August when we ran across this at Lifehacker. A blogger by the name of Joe McKay discovered that Gmail will get rid of their contextual ads if your email contains tragic enough words.
I remember this, yeah.
So we put together a sentence that you could put in your signature if you so desired.
Let me have that, yes.
Okay, our sentence, and you can tweak this in many different ways, whatever you... Our sentence is, I enjoy the massacre of ads. This sentence will slaughter ads without a messy bloodbath. And so when Gmail reads the message for the contextual ads and it sees massacre and slaughter and bloodbath, it assumes that you don't want... probably rightly assumes that you don't want to look at ads related to that.
I enjoy the slaughter of ads. This sentence will...
I enjoy the massacre of ads. This
massacre
sentence will slaughter ads without a messy bloodbath. And actually, there's even... I don't know if you can do this by default or you have to turn on a Gmail Labs feature, but someone recommended you could take that and make the text of the signature white so no one would even see it. I'm all for ad-supported services, so I don't send...
Well, isn't this ironic how we're talking about free stuff, and yet we're also talking about... how to kill the ads that makes the free stuff possible.
But it's a fun little trick.
Make that your signature, then. I enjoy this massacre of ads. This sentence will slaughter ads without a messy bloodbath.
So if you send someone to someone, it won't have ads.
Adam, there's got to be somebody at Google right now who's trying to pick the exact right ad to go with that.
Yeah. You got to be careful, though.
How not to be a jerk to us.
Yeah, you got to be careful, though. Oh, that's so
chicken
funny.
Soup for the geek.
Yeah, something about how free... is the future of the internet, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, it'll all be the benefits of added websites.
A link to Chris's book, perhaps.
Yeah.
On audible.com. Hey, great. Thanks for the three tips in one. And I've already enabled the playback in here in my Gmail for my Google Voice, which is fantastic. That's very exciting. In fact, I can do it now. It's got exactly the same player, which is really slick, in the Gmail that it has in Google Voice. I love that. So thank you.
Yeah.
Very handy tip. Once again, Google does it again. And now it's time for Jeff Jarvis and our number of the night.
The number of the night is 5 million. That, according to the Google official blog, is how many students are going back to school this fall using Google Apps and Google Apps Education Edition as part of what they're doing. That's in 145 countries, up 400%.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing. And I think it's more than just bragging. I think it's more important as an indicator of kind of the disaggregation of education that can come. If students and educators are all on Google in this way, they can do amazing things. My students in my entrepreneurial journalism class at City University of New York, where I teach, are creating a service called a Notebook, a K-N-O-W, Notebook, as a platform for science and technology students and teachers to share news and curriculum. Zephyr Teachout has a column in tomorrow's Washington Post that I link to on my blog, Buzz Machine, about a disaggregated future of education. I then link to my chapter in What Would Google Do? With the whole idea. So I think that part of the argument we're seeing is that what's happened to media in disaggregation is next going to come to education. And I think the fact that there are 5 million students using Google Apps is in itself not very important, but it shows the infrastructure for education itself is going to change radically and fast.
And 5 million, I don't know what the total number of students in college is, something like 15.9 million.
This is, of course, across 145 countries.
Ah, okay.
They also even put up a map showing which schools have already gone over to Google Apps as their primary means of collaboration.
According to Facts for Features from the Census, 74.6 million students starting from nursery school through college.
Oh.
So that's quite a few. 53.8 million elementary and high school. And
what's that leave? 25 million?
Yeah, let me see. Oh. High school students. I think it said the projected number of students enrolled in the nation's colleges and universities this fall, 15.9 million. So 5 million, even if it's global, that's a significant number.
Yeah, it is. And infrastructurally, now, what the hell, one more Google Wave mentioned because we haven't had enough. But if you go up to what Adam was saying earlier, you now look at collaboration. If you think of Google Wave, I've been thinking about it as media. If you think of Google Wave in the classroom.
Yes.
And the classroom is now disaggregated across the world where the best students and best teachers find each other and collaborate on work. That's new. That's big.
You know, that was one of the changes that I thought was underreported, but most important about the changes Apple made to iTunes this week and to the iPhone with their 3.1 software. They surfaced iTunes U on both. Which is a great resource. I mean, and if you look at it, if you start browsing iTunes U the same way you browse the iTunes Store, there's amazing stuff there. Lectures from the best universities in the world. You could get a full college education on your iPod.
I talked to the president of the New School in New York. I don't think I mentioned this before, but he was saying, what do I do when there's all these great lectures at MIT and Harvard and Stanford? And as we talked about it, brainstorming, we thought you may consider kind of the UK version of the lecturer and tutor. So maybe New School in New York has a tutor who helps take the individual students through the work of the lecturers at MIT and Stanford and Harvard and Cambridge and Oxford. And everybody gets a higher quality education in terms of getting the very best of the breed. It's more efficient. You don't have everybody teaching the same course, but you also then have the resource more targeted to more individual work.
Yes.
And the business of the university, well, it's screwed, just like media has been.
But it's good for the common weal, and that's what we really care about in the long run.
They don't pay me much anyway, so what the hell.
Devilind is saying in the chat room that Google Wave works brilliantly for use at university. I use it with some of my fellow students to collaborate about notes from lectures. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
I think collaboration is clearly, like, it's the most obvious thing the first time you use it where you can see a lot of potential.
But I think that's the media application too, Jeff. We're going to use it to collaborate with our audience.
Right.
In effect.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the future of news.
Yeah. By the way, I do want to give you a plug, Adam. Actually, Gina wrote this article. Gina Trapani gets the plug, really. She wrote an article, 7 Easy Ways to Integrate Your Google Apps. It's at lifehacker.com.
Yep.
So for those 15 million students now using Google Apps in school, integrate them all together. And she's got some great tips in there. As always, even when Gina's not here, she's the best.
Yes.
My Google tool of the week is something you both alluded to, I think, already. It's something that's out of Google UK. And it kind of talks a little bit about toward what we were talking about with Google having a lot of interesting information. If you could but extract it or find a way to, you know, get that information out of it. It's a Google Internet Stats. Now, I don't know why it's only google.co.uk, but maybe they're gonna make it worldwide. But if you Google Internet Stats, you'll find it quickly. Every time you refresh the page, you get a new stat. For instance, this one: search made up 40% of online advertising in Western Europe in 2008. Some of it's more interesting than that, but you can keep clicking. 95.1% of users connected to the internet in the UK are on broadband connections.
I tweeted this today and somebody came back and said, oh, good, a new time suck.
It really is. I mean, you got consumer trends, macroeconomic trends, media consumption, media landscape and technology. And it's just, you know, it's factoids. It's just a ton of factoids. I probably could have searched here for university students and found that information much more quickly. Let me see, just out of curiosity. Google Internet Stats. I can give you the link. It's a long one. Nope. It's not in there. But there are a lot of, maybe it is. It's doing a search right now. But it's just a really, you're right, another internet time sink. Just browse around and find cool stuff. A reminder to you all that you can call us. We have a listener feedback line. Woohoo! Thanks to Google Voice, 9795 Twig VM. If you're outside the U.S., that's +1-979-589-4486. We've already got a number of messages from people listening to the show live. We do that show live every Saturday at 2:15 Pacific time. That's 5:15 Eastern or 21:15 UTC. So please tune in at live.twit.tv. Listen to the show after the fact on iTunes or any of the other podcast aggregators. And if you've got a thought about anything we said, we'd love it if you'd call us. 9795-TWIG-VM. Adam Pasch is with Lifehacker. He's the editor-in-chief. So nice to have you on the show today, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com, the author of the fantastic What Would Google Do? Available on audible.com. they're going to see a big hit on audible.com and say, he did it, didn't he? He recommended the book, damn him. But also, we wish you the best. Jeff is going into surgery. Now, I'm not telling tales out of school when I say that because he's been blogging about it for the last couple of months. He lives in public.
So I'll tweet out of the operating room.
No, really? Do you think so? I want to see. You know what I want is the recovery tweet.
Yeah.
That's going to be a new meme. Wow, I see stars. I see stars. So tomorrow you go in, tomorrow morning?
No, Monday morning.
Monday morning. Okay. All the best to you, Jeff. And here's the amazing thing. This man is going to be back on the show next week. He doesn't take time off for nothing. Thank you,
I'll
Jeff.
Show you my scars.
No, I don't want to see your scars. Thank you. Where did? No, I'll ask you after this.
No, you don't want to know. I'll tell you.
I'll ask you after. We're roughly the same age. It's in. I'm sure it's on my docket as well, sometime down the road. So
get your PSA check.
Well, yeah, I do. I'm going in on Monday actually to get a PSA check, and I'm gonna say I want the Jeff Jarvis test right there. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.